That's so funny. So it sounds like two.
Here is, okay, it's 4:05, and I'd like to call the August 8th Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. And we'll do a quick roll call. Margot Garcia.
Present.
Susanna Shippers.
I'm here.
Brian Thomas.
Here.
And Chris Yarder. And I'm here. Okay, let's move on to item two, director's report. Carlos?
Good afternoon. Sorry, I'm just trying to move screens here and there. So it's not, I'll just provide you a brief overview of where we at. I mentioned to you at length in terms of some of the challenges, some of the issues that we have, that we were facing in terms of the new recruitment process, not only in terms of really our new software or information packet, but also separately the actual change on how we were going to recruit for some of our positions. So since then, there's been a few changes in the positive direction, really to relieve some of those processes to make the selection. So one of them is, I believe I mentioned last time, is like when you are the hiring authority looking for a particular position, that you were just to sit down and describe what you were looking for, but not really be part of the initial interview panel. So that has now been lifted. So now as a hiring manager, as the person is looking for a position, can be really fully engaged in the entire process, participate in the interview process, and participate in the selection process throughout. So that's been a big plus. Okay. The other thing that also was changed is before when we were assembling the recruitment package, we were required to submit all of our interview questions that are in our interview packet to Central HR for review and verification and approval. So since then, that has been lifted. So all that work, essentially now we can do that internally with our local HR team, with our essentially selection panel, and we no longer are required really to get that approval prior to holding those interviews. So that's been a big plus on that end. We are one of the things that we are trying to change as well is really trying to make the case is when we do create when we do come up with a hiring list of individuals, the HR team is required really to do what is called a pay rate calculator. So what the pay rate calculator is really it measures or takes a look at the applicant's experience, and then and essentially they plug it into the spreadsheet and come up with a compensation for that particular individual, that particular applicant. What happens on that, those calculators, they may yield that the compensation for that employee may be higher than some of the incumbents that may be here currently working for the city. And so that has created some compression issues, and obviously has created some morale issues. And so, and the approach the city's taking is that we are not addressing, we're not reviewing the salary of the incumbents. So what the ask is, if we got a specific area that we're bringing a lot of folks from the outside, we certainly don't want to create really compression issues between the incumbents, the new folks, or really be in a position that say, yes, you may have the same years of experience, but I've been here with the city for 20 years, and yet you're making more than what I'm making. So if there's parity in experience, maybe the incumbents are making less than the folks that are being brought on board. So we're hoping that we can say, why don't we basically initially, instead of offering the salary that is being calculated, but that has been provided by the base rate calculator, why don't we basically offer the initial, the starting wage of that salary, maybe establish some sort of a false floor that stays within the first quartile of that compensation, offer that to the individual, and then from there it becomes to be the salary negotiation to bring you on board, rather than to right off the bat really offer you a much higher salary that obviously creates some compression issues with some of the folks that we have on the table. So that's kind of what we're talking right now, just to make sure that that one, we don't create that compression issue. And second is really try to obviously minimize from a business perspective, really the cost of bringing some of the folks in there. Don't want to be cheap, but at the same time, want to make sure that at least we exercise some fiscal responsibility as we go along and fill some of those positions. So I think at the end of the day, what I described for you last time was there a lot of possibly viewed as a lot of frustration. We're making some progress, moving in the right direction. And we've been very, very lucky in the past few recruitments that we have a lot of candidates, and the recent recruitments have yielded a lot of possible folks that are coming into the table. So from in terms of operators, I think we got over 40 applicants, so which is really good. And I think we narrowed it down to about 18 candidates out of those 40. So I think that's great. From mechanics, I think we had over 12 candidates and we narrowed that list to about six. I think the code enforcement inspector position just closed or is in the process of closing. We had over 41 candidates. So it's been moving fairly good. So we're hoping that we can begin to fill some of those positions sooner rather than later.
Oh, good.
Hooray for you getting that done.
It's been a long dry spell.
It has been.
You know.
Sure. I've discussed the story that you told us with a number of different people in different kinds of situations. And one of the interesting suggestions that was given to me was by a person who's big in computers, is that since we have all that data for the operators from their the trackers that are on the trucks, that you could use that as a basis for starting the percentages of time spent in driving, in waiting, in checking in, and so forth. And they thought you would have a really strong case for that. So I thought that was an interesting suggestion. And maybe you've already thought of that, but I just thought I'd pass that along.
So Ms. Margot, I missed on covering that as well. So they did away from making those calculations in terms of the percentages. So now we go back to the general description of that. But yes, you have a good point. We can certainly use that technology really to come up with that percentages. So again, that was also a big thing for us, that we no longer have to fix that as well or create that. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. And that was one that seemed to me was useful to pass on if you ever had to do that again. But people were quite surprised at the detail that people were asking by mm-hmm. people who weren't even sitting in the job. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good news.
Well, thank you.
And I had to mute you and go to the subcommittee meeting yesterday when you spoke in front of mayor and council about the homeless cleanup. So.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I went back and watched it. Did a good job. So.
Any interesting questions that they asked you?
No questions. I think it was really, I think it was a good opportunity really for us to provide them the level of work that our crews are doing and the level of effort. And ultimately, part of that is really what are the resources that are being spent on that and how essentially the fund is absorbing those expenses. And I think it's really we need to make sure that we what when we present really our cost of service study at the end of this fall is that's going to be a factor that we need to look at that. And so it's not really just to and some folks on the side, it says, well, how you're affording that is not that we're affording that. It's really the fact that we got to work within our means, and we're making some sacrifices on taking advantage of really some of the salary savings because of vacancies that we got. So that's a factor that allows us to continue to do that. We're not buying the equipment that we need to be buying, and we should. But even though on that, even if we order today, it's not going to be here for 2 years. So there's a lot of this stuff that is factored. But at the end of the day, those expenses at one point in time need to be trued up, and we need to make sure that we have the ability to absorb those costs if we're going to continue in this in the way we're doing business today.
You know, I was just thinking there's really a positive PR piece that could be put into that with the things is that people all over the city are asking, why aren't you cleaning up the, you know, the homeless encampments and please clean them up? And you could say that your, you know, your monthly utility bill is helping, is paying for that cleanup. And then we have X number of crews with X number of people and equipment out there doing that. Because it is one of those things that you clean up and then they come back.
It comes back
So
again,
it's
right.
really frustrating if you're not watching every day, you didn't see the cleanup and then see them come back. So
Right.
I would really encourage you to get people to feel proud that the money they're paying for their trash and recycling is also helping with the cleanup. And they should be proud of themselves they can do that. And that it's not being extra money taken out of the general fund, but it's coming specifically from that.
For that
So,
purpose.
anyway, just an idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There was a little bit of money coming in from the general fund towards the cleanup, but one of the things I wanted to ask you during the call to the audience, there was a young man who is, you know, into doing the mountain biking, which that 100 acres property had where people worked hard to put together trails and ramps and all that stuff for the dirt bikes. And he said that he and others would like to help clean up that property and would be willing to do it, like if the city put a dumpster or something like that. So Paul Cunningham said that he'd connect with him because he was interested in helping out and doing that kind of a cleanup. So there's no problem if people volunteer to do that stuff, is it? Or okay.
And that's part of the effort. Some that's a team up to clean up effort that we have separately out of Christina
Good.
Paul's shop, and that's what we coordinate with essentially all the neighborhood associations really to organize those efforts and really providing the support that they need really to carry out those particular cleanups at the neighborhood level. So yeah, if there's interest, yeah, we can certainly connect with them and providing the support that they may need really to support their cleanup.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was just something good to hear, somebody volunteering to help instead of just complaining. So, okay. Well, let's move on then to the financial monthly report, Maggie.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm going to leave my camera off. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. Just because I'm at a conference and my location is a little, it's not very pretty, so I'll leave my camera off. Brittany, can I share my screen?
Yes, I made you a co-host.
Thank you. Okay, let me just open our Fund 502 report first. I think you all can see this, yes?
Not yet.
Yeah,
I don't, oh, there it is.
I see it.
Okay.
You could make it a little bigger.
All right, let me do that.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
Is
Perfect.
that better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we're just When I made this report, it was last week. So as of the end of July, we had collected 5.1 million in revenues so far. So that's probably not reflective of all of the July revenues for collections. We probably will have some more trickling in the last couple days of the month. And then we had $1.2 million in expenditures. And note that that number might be a little low for in terms of like a monthly average, just because we were so focused at the end of July, getting all the fiscal year 24, all the invoices from things, goods and services received on June 30th or earlier. So and we had a big crunch to get those in the system all by the 25th of July. So we but we were still receiving our regular July invoices from our AGSD colleagues, and so we had to prioritize fiscal year 24. So this might be a little low just in terms of what the month was, but we have 6.4 6 $64.6 million is where we ended up at the year. There are a few more postings that will happen through possibly just maybe some sort of year-end entries that we'll see that will change this number slightly, but probably not drastically. And then $70.9 million in revenues is where we ended the year. So that leaves us with $6.3 million in excess revenues greater than our expenditures for the year, for last fiscal year. One thing to point out is the capital outlay here. When we last looked at our capital outlay amount, and that's going to be our equipment purchases, our large equipment purchases. That number was quite a bit lower when we last looked. It was about $6.5 million, and at the end of June, we were able to bring in some equipment. And you can see that I know Carlos said that there's more equipment that needs to be purchased and had, you know, due to supply chain and other factors. So compared to last year, year over year, we have quite a bit more equipment that purchases than we had in fiscal year 23. Does anyone have any questions about this report before I move on? Okay, I'll go to the programs. I'll make this a little bit bigger again. Is that good?
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
That's good.
All right. So we were talking about the homeless camp cleanup. Most of those costs post to our brush and bulky unit here. And you're correct that the department had been allocated some one-time funding for this in fiscal year 24. That was to the tune of $250,000, which we used to cover salaries. And but that allocation did not come forward into fiscal year 25. So this is the place where we're going to be seeing our homeless camp cleanup costs posting. And for the most part, the year to date, just for fiscal year 25 for the month of July, is it's predominantly salaries at this point. From this view is what's reflected here. Same with code enforcement. We hadn't posted very almost any invoices for code enforcement at the point when I created this report. So these numbers are low, just definitely not reflective of a monthly average. And then for fiscal year 24, our total for code enforcement was $2.4 million. And that code enforcement did receive some allocation from one-time funding from the general, from what the city called investment plan monies outside of just the code enforcement costs in the general fund underneath the environmental services department. So this is the sum total of what got spent last year, and the total budget for code enforcement for fiscal year 25 is the $2.1 million. And graffiti abatement ended up at $683,000 for the year, and our total budget for FY25 is $761 million. So we have a healthy budget. We really work to right size it so that should we incur the capital expenditures that are planned in terms of the construction projects, which will definitely ramp up this year over last year, and also to be able to absorb capital purchases as needed. We built that into this budget request, the $71.8 million for fiscal year 25. Any questions about the individual programs?
I just, administration, and actually, I meant to ask it in the last round. is the administration just being taken out on a monthly basis or at the end? And I'm assuming that's the administration that you pay to the central office for, HR, finances, the manager, the mayor and council, et cetera.
Yes, that is where this program here is where those costs post. And that is approximately $12.3 million. It might be 12.5, but I think it's 12.3 if my memory serves me. And it is posted on a monthly basis. The other costs that post here is the department administration costs. As well. So that staff and a lot of like the community outreach that Christina's team does, and the public relations costs and the printing when we do mailings and things like that, those post there as well.
So that's under administration.
Yeah. And other things post there, like the bond, the COPS, the certificate of participation. Uh-huh. Payments, things, those sort of very centralized department type costs, those will post there as well.
Okay. Any other questions for Maggie? Okay, thank you.
Sure. Okay, let me see about unsharing. Okay, stop sharing. Okay. Thanks for being patient with me. Have a nice afternoon.
All right, you too.
Thank you. Enjoy your conference.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. So let's see. I can, for the subcommittee report, I can start a little bit. Margo, you tell me if I'm missing something, okay?
Okay.
The waste diversion collections and education. Christine has been doing a great job with the Hefty Renew program, answering all the questions. And a lot of them get asked over and over again. So this last town hall, the virtual town hall, was 140 people who were checking in. She did say that Bashes is going to start carrying the orange bags, Ace Hardware. I know I get mine delivered from Target, and they're actually a pretty good price because Walmart seems to be out of them all the time. And she did mention at that time that, and maybe you can... tell me if this is correct, Carlos, that the plastics that have been stored at Freeman are going to be needed to be landfilled?
So the materials are being stored at Freeman. One of the biggest costs that we have with that service provider is there is a storage fee of $80 a ton for every anything that we have storage of beyond 80 tons. So my recollection is we have over 200 tons, 250 tons of material in storage. So we don't want to continue to pay the $20,000 of material storage at Freedman. So we are transporting that material to Los Reales for storage. So it could be processed later. So no, it is not being landfilled. We did landfill a few plastic bales that had been inspected by Fusion. That those were the original bales that we transported for tanks to Los Reales, and it had a lot of contamination, had a lot of industrial waste, and so we did dispose of that material at Los Reales. But the stuff that is being collected by the roll-offs and that is going to Freedman, and Freedman had it in storage, all that material essentially is being shipped to Los Reales to avoid the payment of that storage fee to Freedman. So. And the plan is obviously once BioFusion is up and running, they will have a big stock of plastic that they can begin to process.
Okay.
The other thing I thought, Chris, was suggesting that people go to the Boise, Idaho website.
Oh,
and,
yes.
They're working with Hefty Renew and look at how they've set up what can go into Hefty Renew and what can go into the regular recycling, because we got into quite a discussion, for instance, that fruit baskets can go, you know, the fruit containers can go into the regular blue barrels, and mm-hmm. the plastic cups can go into the blue bin, but you put the lids into Hefty because they're too small. So, you know, some of the nuanced efforts apparently are as well treated at the Boise, Idaho website, and people are suggesting that we use that as a model for our new website that will take bring that up. So
okay.
I thought that was really interesting, and I looked at it partly, and it was really quite amazing, the pictures, the detail that they put in there.
Yeah, a lot of detail.
So
mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
That should help. Okay, we didn't have the MRF report.
But we got it now.
I, for some reason, I didn't get it. You want to go through? Did you look at it, or we had the?
Well, this was the annual one that he put together. I don't think we got the monthly one yet.
Yeah, no, we didn't get the monthly.
I sent it after the meeting to everybody.
I didn't see it. Yeah.
All right. I
just got the PowerPoint.
So the information was that for the fiscal year 24, we paid $1 million to the MRF, and which is down from fiscal year 23, where we paid $1.4 million to the MRF. And primarily that was because there's a much better market for the materials being collected. So that's more money was coming in. And for instance, the average commodity revenue in 24 was $92.48, whereas in fiscal year 23 had been $71. So it was a big increase by 29.3%. So things are moving along in the right direction.
Okay, we are seeing a little bit of a downward trend in tonnage. So, anyhow, it's really raining hard at my house.
It's getting ready to do that here.
Oh, okay. All right, let's see. Let me go back to what we talked about. Lori Pumphreys, who, you know, is now the supervisor for the VANS program, said that Martin Lopez was going to be the acting inspector advisor, which is a role that code enforcement really needs to have filled.
They were recruiting for five
hiring.
Positions.
Yeah, five positions,
which is a big number.
And they had
Turnplace.
a big turnout for people applying. I think she said 57 people apply, but of course you got to go through all of them and sort out who's going to be appropriate. So those positions really do need to be filled ASAP since code enforcement is behind a year on some things. So and that's good news. They've been gutted for too long. Oh, for the I did ask her about the lien foreclosure program that they're not having to go through city court, which we all know slows everything down for code enforcement, and they're going to be using the city attorney's office for
And
the
going to
lien
the Superior Court.
foreclosure program. So that's really super good news. So that should move along a whole lot better. Let's see. Frank gave us a bifusion update. Let's see. All bids were in for the VFL. All bids were in for construction. VFL Construction was the low bid at 3.4 million. And I remember when you said, Carlos, you'd set aside what 2.4 million, but you were sure that it was going to end up being 3.4 million to build their facilities. So there it is. And that was the low bid. I don't know how high the high bids were, but just with construction costs in general, I know everything's expensive.
And
Still
supposed
no,
to start
yeah, no start date, maybe in 4 weeks.
next 4 weeks, he said.
Yeah,
And right now
yeah.
the city is clearing off the property and getting it ready for starting of the construction.
Right. So I guess the clearing off the recycling tires and the neighborhood containers. So he showed us where it's going to be north of the HHW and west of the scales. He said that for the green waste diversion, I guess that big storm that came through and knocked over all the trees helped save them because they were low on green waste, and they managed to get 450 to 500 tons of green waste that was pretty clean to add to the compost pile. So that was good news because they were hurting for that.
After it was chipped, they had the
Yeah.
chipper come and do that.
Yeah.
And they worked 3 days to grind all that up.
Yeah, that was a lot of. Let's see, for collection, they had three new refuse routes for Fridays with new start times. They were really trying to get the public to understand they have to get their barrels out by 6 a.m. But they were in the past experiencing late days. So a lot of them weren't finishing up till 4:30 or even 6.
6 o'clock.
Yeah. So equipment update, we saw pictures of the EV side loader, which is being showcased in Las Vegas. And he's gonna this was that Ho that was Jose that was talking
Yeah.
about that. Yeah. So he said he's gonna bring lots of pictures for us for the next for the next meeting because we like to see those. Lot of public outreach. Christina's been really busy. 75% of her weekends have been used for outreach programs, back to school bash. And they're getting good turnouts for that, so that's really good. Collections, let's see. He's bringing pictures. We talked to, oh, he showed us the PowerPoint for the homeless protocol, Carlos. And let's see.
The public outreach you skipped over?
No, I just said that she'd done the back to school bash. And
okay, I missed that somehow. Food cycle trainings.
Yeah, oh, and yeah. The composting and what else? Okay.
We suggested some big new stickers on the trucks. We saw two
right.
patterns or two different ideas for them, advertising that they're electric. And so that would be, again, good PR for the ES.
Yeah. Okay. And we're going to talk about this at the next meeting, but Trevor mentioned that you guys are going to be going over the agreement with the compost cats.
They need to use the bathroom.
So we'll hear how that goes. All right, that's it. Sorry for not being organized. So let's go to future agenda items. Any requests? This is for full ESAC. I think for July, which we missed, were we going to have someone from our subcommittee come talk to full ESAC about, I don't know. The things that we talk about, I don't know, come and talk about the MRF stuff, or maybe they could come and talk about the new equipment, because there's a lot. I think full ESAC would be interested in seeing that.
Especially the electric vehicle, since that's been such a big, you know, point.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we could get Jose to come and tell the whole group and show the pictures and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we all, I think, we'll appreciate the new electric vehicles, that's for sure. So that maybe we can have an equipment show.
And the homeless cleanup, I guess, is online for people to look at. I would say one of the things to really look at is the challenges of going into the tunnels and cleaning them up.
Yeah.
So he was saying that they can only go in so far as so long as they keep seeing daylight. And when it's when they longer can see daylight, they turn around and back out. And this is, of course, because they're going under the freeway, they're going under major, you know, 6-lane, 8-lane roads. And so those culverts are pretty big, pretty long. And just some of the work that they were doing around on tier two, where people can continue to be there, that they provide roll-offs for people to come and put their waste in and then come and pick them up periodically. Because I think there's been some concern about, you know, just forcing everybody out, and here's a way to at least be somewhat benign. Obviously, there's still the issue of sanitations and porta potties, and I don't know how that's being solved yet. But I know when we've had encampments on our church property, one of the things that's really freaked the church volunteers out is picking up human waste. And so it probably freaks out the the regular employees, so they may get used to it.
And the needle, and the needles, the needles, and the foil and stuff.
So if there's ways to let the people do that themselves, it seemed to me that would lessen some of the impact on the staff and the employees.
If they're able to, because I'm not sure that many of them are able to.
Well, I don't know. The psychologists have found in general, and of course, they're dealing with people who don't have a lot of social problems is that people will do the right thing when they're given the tools and the information on how to do it. So I suspect that if there's dumpsters there that they can throw their trash in, they would take the time to do that. Maybe not recycle and separate, but at least put all the trash in one place.
Okay. Can you think of anything else for our fully stack?
You got the compost cats thing coming up?
Well, we're going to wait and hear about that from Trevor, and I don't know if Carlos, if you'd want to talk about that or
Sure.
renegotiation of the, what is it, an IGA?
Yeah, I can review, essentially discuss or provided the changes on, or the modifications to that IGA. Yes, to that
Okay.
agreement. I
Okay.
can
Well,
cover that.
that'll be going to mayor and council
Yes, ultimately it will.
eventually. Okay.
Yes.
What about what's happening with the gas picked up out of the landfill? What's happening to that gas, to the gas, methane gas, the landfill gas?
We still are waiting really for developer to put back and provide us the proposal in terms of really the agreement, and so they're still evaluating what they need to do, and part of what they need to do is also really coming up physically to the infrastructure really to absorb that, but also really looking at executing the agreement as well. So that's where they're at. So I had a follow-up discussion with Frank and our procurement guys. Just we really need to get that wrapped up, and our intent was to be able to have an agreement pretty much in a rough form by August, and obviously that hasn't happened, and so we need to push that more, make sure that we have something more formal from them.
So
So I can.
can you put that into your report next time
Sure,
as
I
to
can do that.
where we are with
Okay.
that? Because I do think we need, to keep moving forward on that.
Sure.
And anything else on the horizon that we could have some input into or some I know that Circular Arizona is having a presentation on with this plastics, U.S. Plastics Pact. Is that something we're going to be involved in, or?
Ms. Margo, I'm not sure, but I can check.
Okay. Because that's a larger, I think it's a larger national effort. If that's something we should, it's on the 21st of August, is their presentation.
Okay.
What's happening with that?
Okay.
Okay. All right. I think we've got several things going on. So let's go to item six, call to the audience. And here we are at item seven, adjournment, and it is 4:48. So we're getting out of here early. Oh, let me ask you a question, Carlos. Did your wife have to buy another car?
Yes, what happened to your car from the tree falling on it?
It was my neighbor. It was my neighbor's car. So yeah, she ended up her vehicle was total, and so yeah, she ended up buying a new. Oh, she's in the process of buying a new car. Yes.
Okay. That was the last thing we talked about 2 months ago, and I'm thinking, oh my
I
God, what
know.
happened to her
Yes.
car? Well, okay, that's good news. Hope she got the car she wanted. So, yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good night. There's lots of rain and thunder and
It's
lightning out there. So, have a safe trip home, guys.
okay.
Yep.
Thank
Okay.
you.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Take care. We'll be
Thank
in
you.
touch. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.